get started. I'd like to now hand the floor to our IT subject matter expert, the fabulous Laura Hunter, and let her tell you a little bit about herself before jumping into her presentation. Thank you, Laura.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone, and greetings from not quite sunny Seattle very early this morning. My name is Laura Hunter, and I am an IT architect within Microsoft's within Microsoft internal IT for the identity and access management area. And so what does that mean? What does that mean in terms of when we think about managing identity, managing authentication and authorization within a hybrid cloud world? From an organizational perspective, the identity management team within Microsoft IT is responsible for things like Active Directory, things like Active Directory Federation Services, identity management, Forefront Identity Manager, Microsoft Identity Manager, and things like PKI and RMS. And I think these are all technologies that by this point are very familiar to really any number of folks out there who are probably running very similar infrastructures, very similar architectures in this hybrid cloud sort of world. And so today we're going to talk about what it means and what it looks like to run an identity management infrastructure in a hybrid cloud world for a company like Microsoft, who is such a large and such a global presence. And so when we think about what does it mean to work in IT for Microsoft, what does it mean to do identity management for Microsoft, you know, you think of Microsoft as being a software company, you think of Microsoft as being a cloud services company, and we are, but we're also just a Fortune 100 organization with 100,000 employees and tens of thousands of vendors and all of these different constituencies. We have customers and we have business partners, and at the end of the day, we have people who come to work every day and just plain want their stuff to work. They walk into their office in the morning, they turn on their laptop, and they want email to work, kind of like anybody else. And that's where Microsoft IT comes in. That's where we focus on how do we manage IT for a global enterprise. We have employees, we have physical presence on 6 out of 7 continents. No sales presence in Antarctica yet. I'm still working on that. And hundreds of thousands of managed systems, tons of mobile devices, 8 million linked calls every month. I mean, we just have this very large and very diverse and highly mobile workforce. And so when we think about managing the business of Microsoft and providing services like email, like Link, like all these different collaboration services, we kind of find that identity management and identity management technologies provide the underpinnings and the underlying supporting architecture that allows all of these collaboration tools, all of these different technologies that sit on top of them to function effectively. You know, I like to say that identity is the security boundary of the internet, and identity is the road to the cloud. And so as Microsoft as a company started moving towards adoption of cloud services, adoption of applications living up in Azure, the identity management infrastructure that we run becomes extremely critical to the success not only of just our cloud adoption, but also of ensuring that our employees can remain productive and secure in this new hybrid world. And so when we think about how we manage identities, how we do the hybrid cloud at Microsoft, I think we have, even though we are Microsoft IT, I think we have very similar challenges to really any similarly sized organization in terms of the services that we provide and how we provide them. What we really want to do and what we really want to focus on is how do we keep our users productive while maintaining the security and the integrity of our company's data, of our company information. And so the approach that we take, the way that we work on it, the way that we again think about it, is we want to take a people-centric approach to managing identities to managing all of these different cloud technologies within this hybrid cloud world. I used to say that identity was easy. You had people on one side and you had stuff on the other, and you had people needing to get access to their stuff. And at a basic level, I think that still very much applies today. The additional pivots that have been added over time is that now we have people wanting to use devices. We have all of these different device types. It's not just the employee on the domain joined PC sitting at their desk anymore. We want to be able to support people working on the device that works best for them. We want to be able to support people bringing their tablets, people bringing their phones, and people being able to work at the time and the place that makes them that makes them most productive, that lets them do the best work for the company. And so we look at how can we provide these services that allow our users to use the devices that they want, to access the apps that they want, and to access the data that they need, while still providing, from an IT perspective, while still providing the management and the access control and the information protection that allows us to protect our data. And really what we think about when we think about managing identities and managing security in a cloud-based world is that it all really does come down to the data. You know, gone are the days of the corporate network sitting behind the $100,000 firewall with the hard and crunchy exterior and the soft and mushy interior. I still care about protecting my network. I really do. I still care about protecting my PCs. I absolutely do. But the reason I care about protecting these things is because my data traverses that network, and my data resides on those PCs. And at the end of the day, it's that data that is really what I want to be protecting, and also what I want to be providing easy access to my users to be able to be productive, get their jobs done, and work in the way that makes the most sense to them. And so when we think about what an identity management infrastructure looks like within a company like Microsoft, when we think about hybrid identity, when we think about managing the hybrid cloud, hybrid really starts with a well-managed, well-maintained on-premises identity infrastructure. Microsoft as a company has been around for about as long as I've been alive, and we've been running on-premises Active Directory since April 19th of 2000. I think we have the oldest production Active Directory on the planet. And so when we look at how we have managed Active Directory historically, all of the principles and all of the architectural principles that we've used in managing our on-premises Active Directory translate directly into how we can be successful in adopting the cloud and how we can be successful in managing a hybrid cloud environment. And so, unsurprisingly, Microsoft IT has a large, well-developed on-premises Active Directory environment. We have, at last count, we have 8 production forests on-premises and 20 Active Directory domains within those forests. And so there is, obviously, there's a lot of operational expertise that needs to go along with managing all of those things. One of the sort of architectural principles, one of the operational principles that we came to very early on is that Active Directory is really good at publishing your data, replicating it everywhere it needs to go. But what we needed to have in place in order to maintain the health and well-being of our on-premises Active Directory is that we really wanted to focus on where the data that goes into that directory is being sourced from, and making sure that the data that goes into that directory is authoritative, is well-maintained, and is accurate. And the way that we do that is by way of synchronizing data into our Active Directory from the best possible source, from the most authoritative source for that data. And so for our HR systems, for our user objects, for example, we use the most authoritative source for humans working at Microsoft. Rather obviously, that's our HR system. And so we have an HR system that is authoritative for our user data. We have other systems that we have line of business applications that that store application-specific data, like, oh, you're a director at Microsoft. That means that you can approve expense reports up to X amount of dollars, you know, very application-specific information. And so we take all of this authoritative data, all of this authoritative information that's coming from a myriad of different sources, and we use a system, Forefront Identity Manager, now rebranded as a Microsoft Identity Manager. We use this as sort of the clearinghouse that allows us to pull data in from all of these different authoritative sources and apply business logic as we need to, and then transmit that data into our on-premises Active Directory, which then allows Active Directory to, again, do the thing it's good at. Take that well-managed, well-maintained data and replicate it and publish it to all of our locations worldwide so that people can access the applications and access the collaboration tools that depend on it. And one of those applications, one of those tools that depends on this well-managed, well-maintained data is our adoption of the cloud, is our adoption of things like Office 365. And so when we look at extending our services from our on-premises network into things like Azure Active Directory, into things like Azure, into things like Go365, when we started this journey, when we started walking down this road of cloud adoption, we kind of figured out that, boiling it down to first principles, every service that you access, every application that you access, needs to do three things. It needs to figure out who you are. We call that authentication. It needs to allow you to interact with other users of that application, other users within your company. Exchange needs a global address list. SharePoint needs a people picker. We call this directory. And then the third thing that it needs to do is it needs to figure out, this service, this application, needs to figure out what you are able to do, what you are authorized to do within that application. We think of that as entitlements. Now, in an on-premises world, the great majority, in fact, the bulk of the of these services, the bulk of these things, were offered by our on-premises Active Directory. When we move into a cloud world, we have to start thinking about how can we take the functionality that's being offered by our on-premises Active Directory and move it into the cloud. And so when we think about, let's kind of take those one at a time. When we think about how we extend authentication, you know, how the application knows who you are, how we, when we extend that into the cloud, we look at, and what Microsoft has deployed, is Active Directory Federation Services. Now, this is technology that comes with Windows Server. It's built right into every version of Windows Server since Server 2008. It's built into 2008, 2012, 2012 R2. It's a built-in role that exists within Server 2012 R2. And the best way to think about ADFS, the best way to think about AD Federation Services, if you've never worked with it before, is it is your authentication gateway to the cloud. It allows you to take your existing on-premises on-premises authentication services, things like Active Directory that employ very LAN-friendly protocols like Kerberos and like NTLM, and it allows you to take that on-premises authentication and translate it so that your employees can access cloud-based services that speak modern intranet-friendly protocols, things like SAML, things like WS Federation, things like OAuth. And what ADFS allows us to do, and one of the really great benefits of it, is that ADFS allows us to not only enable authentication to our cloud-based services and to our services hosted in Azure, but it also allows us to manage authentication for our remaining on-premises applications. So obviously, again, Microsoft, big, large organization, rather significant inventory of line of business applications. We are in the process of migrating these applications into the cloud, but it takes kind of a long time to turn the ship. And so we have a number of applications that are still line of business applications that are residing on-prem. And what ADFS, what Federation allows us to do is it allows our application owners to take an incremental step of updating their application to interact with a federation service like ADFS, which then sets them up for, hey, when you're now ready to take your application that resides on-prem, move it into Azure PaaS, move it into IaaS, you can make that change without your authentication stack needing to change. Your authentication stack and the way that you've done authentication for your application, it becomes portable. It becomes very easy for our application owners to take their on-premises applications and move them into platform as a service, move them into infrastructure as a service. So really provides a lot of benefit to a company like Microsoft IT that has a pretty large inventory of not only cloud-based applications, but also on-premises line of business applications. So we've talked about authentication. Now let's move on to the directory. And again, when we think about how an application functions in an on-premises world, there are things that you sort of take for granted. When you installed Exchange on-premises, you never had to do anything special to make your GAL work. It just happened by way of installing Exchange. For SharePoint, you never had to do anything special to make your People Picker work. It just kind of happened. And all of this happened by way of that deep integration with on-premises Active Directory and the on-premises applications that integrated with it. When we move to the cloud, when we move to software as a service options like Exchange Online, like SharePoint Online, well, Exchange Online still needs a GAL. SharePoint Online still needs a People Picker. How do we provide that directory information? How do we provide that directory service to our users now that we are in this hybrid cloud world? And the way that we do that, you remember a couple of slides ago, I talked about how the way we manage our on-premises data and our on-premises identity data is by way of using Identity Manager to take all of our identity data, suck it in from all of these authoritative sources, and then push it into Active Directory. What something like Identity Manager, what Identity Manager allows us to do is then make a very incremental change to simply add Office 365, Azure Active Directory, as a second target where we push our identity data. And so just like we take all of our authoritative information, put it out into Active Directory today so that all of our on-premises applications will function and will have that directory information. We then updated Forefront Identity Manager to synchronize our on-premises identity data, our on-premises directory data, into Azure Active Directory. And so on the slide here, you'll actually see two different examples of relevant architectures here, just to give you an idea. The architecture that Microsoft IT has deployed is the one that you see on the bottom, which is we have our on-premises Active Directory on one side, we have Azure Active Directory on the other, and then sitting in the middle, we have ADFS, which we just talked about, Active Directory Federation Services, that provides authentication between our on-premises and our cloud-based services. And then we use, on the slide, it's called Identity Sync. From a product standpoint, it's Microsoft Identity Manager. We use Identity Sync to synchronize our identity data, our directory data, from on-premises Active Directory into Azure Active Directory. I gave you an example, and so you see that on the top half of the slide, of a different architecture that you could use based on some new features that have been released within the product, which is if you don't have Active Directory Federation Services, if you don't have Federation Services on premises, but you still want to adopt the cloud, you now have the ability to, when synchronizing your directory data into the cloud, you can also synchronize your password hashes into the cloud, which will allow the same single sign-on experience that you get with ADFS today. It just does it a little bit differently. It uses synchronization of data rather than ADFS as that sort of translation point between your on-prem Active Directory and your Azure Active Directory. Now, Microsoft IT uses the one that's on the bottom because, honestly, we had Federation in place long before we had Office 365 in place. In fact, we had Federation in place before Office 365 existed. And so when it came time to adopt the cloud, adopt Azure, using that Federation infrastructure was a really easy choice for us because we already had it in place. If you're new to the, if you're new to cloud adoption, if it's something that you're just starting to work on, identity sync with hashing, with synchronization of password hashes might be a different option for you to explore. And that's something that we probably have some resources on at the end of the slide. And so we've done authentication, we've done directory, and now we get to the end and we talk about how do we extend entitlements? How do we extend entitlements into the cloud? How do we let our cloud services know what our users are authorized to do? I know who you are, I've got a directory, now I need to know what you're allowed to do within that application. And there's a number of services that exist within Azure Active Directory today that allow us to make these kind of decisions and to set these sort of entitlement policies, and that also just allow us to provide services to our users to allow them to manage their own sets of entitlements where it's appropriate, or to allow IT as a centralized organization to manage entitlements. A very good example of this, you see it right on the top of the slide. We have the ability today to provide self-service group management capabilities. Now, it's worth noting that we have this both on-premises as well as in the cloud today. There is self-service group management capabilities in Azure. There are also self-service group management capabilities through on-premises FIM. And again, because Microsoft has been playing this game for rather a long time, we've got a little bit of both. But what this allows us to do is it allows our application owners and our different business owners to create these different Active Directory groups, be they an on-premises Active Directory or an Azure Active Directory, to manage access to these different kinds of applications. If you're in group 1, 2, 3, 4, you have write access to this SharePoint site. If you're in group 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you have contribute access to the SharePoint site over here. And so it becomes really easy to allow the people who own the applications, the people who are responsible for the SharePoint sites, to manage their own application access and to manage who should have access to their stuff without needing IT to get in the way. And with a company of 200,000 some odd employees and vendors, I pretty much don't want IT to be in the group management business. I would much rather create services that allow me to empower my end users to be able to take care of this themselves without needing to call IT every time they set up a new application. Similarly, we have other services that allow for self-service password changes and self-service password reset. Way back in the before time, if you forgot your password, if you were on vacation for a few weeks, came back in, oh my gosh, I forgot my password, you had to call the help desk, and then the help desk had to go through this whole process of making sure you were who you said you were and transmitting the new password to you. This for a very long time was the number one driver of help desk calls into Microsoft IT and into our global help desk. And so using things like Identity Manager, things like Azure Active Directory, we now have the ability to create a self-service experience around password resets where, okay, you came back from leave, oh my gosh, I forgot my password. You can now go out to this website experience that uses different mechanisms to be able to securely reset your own password. Maybe we'll send a one-time link to a personal email address that you've pre-registered some time ago. Maybe we'll send an SMS code to your personal cell phone number, again, that you've registered before. And this really allows us to, it not only just plain saves the company money because we don't have these people calling into the help desk, but it also, again, empowers our end users to get back up and running and get back to being productive and doing the business of Microsoft without having a call to the help desk ruining their day. I really like this feature. I think it's very cool.
Talk a little bit more about the feature of multi-factor authentication and how we have it deployed here in Microsoft?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So as a company, we have done, Microsoft has had strong authentication in place for years and years. Historically, the way that we've done strong authentication has been by way of the physical smart card. Anyone who's visited Microsoft or had, you know, a Microsoft account rep visit you, you've seen the blue badge. Everyone has one hanging off of their belt. I left mine at home today and had to go through some rigmarole to get through the door, and that's a good thing. The challenge being that as we've started moving into this world of new device types and wanting to allow people to work on the device that works best for them, well, I take my iPad and where am I going to stick my smart card? There's not a slot for it, so I can't use my long-standing mechanism for strong authentication on these new device types. But I still want to enable people to use those devices, and I still want those devices, access from those devices, to be secure. And so what we have is Azure Multi-Factor Authentication, MFA, which effectively allows you to use your cell phone, either your personal cell phone or your company-issued cell phone, in place of a strong authenticator like a physical smart card. So, for example, you could go out to a website, go out to a SharePoint Online site, and I go and log into that site, and I put in my username and password, but then IT, someone, me or someone else, has decided that, hey, Laura hasn't logged in for a while, or this is a really sensitive SharePoint site, there's like some really sensitive information here, or hey, I've got this telemetry that says that like Laura's done some like funky behavior, like I don't know, she's logging in from Elbonia at 3 a.m. and that's unusual for her, so I'm going to trigger her for an additional factor of authentication. And so my cell phone's going to ring, or I'm going to get a text message, or there's a little authenticator app that runs on my phone. It's really cool. I just get a little, you know, push notification on my phone. Hey, Laura, is this really you? You know, allow or deny. And that allows us to provide an additional level of authentication for our sensitive resources sitting in the cloud. And it allows us to do it in a really ubiquitous way so that it doesn't just have to be the domain join PC sitting in the office anymore, because that's just not the reality of how people work anymore. So, hey, it's almost like clickbait. What keeps me awake at night? You'll never believe what happens next. What happens next is that there are things that keep me awake at night. And so kind of on that topic of how we secure our resources and how we secure our stuff while still allowing people to be productive, use the devices that they want to use, I kind of take a three-pronged approach. And so when I think about how we secure our resources, how we secure our data in this hybrid cloud world, I kind of have a three-pronged approach. The first thing I want to do is I want to protect user credentials. Everyone's familiar with phishing attacks, where attackers will convince someone to enter their username and password into a well-crafted, suspicious website and then go off and create chaos. The best way for me to solve that is to stop the use of passwords. The day that I can go to my user base and say, you will never be prompted for a password to access a Microsoft corporate resource. If someone asks you for a password, stop, because they're phishing you. The day that I can make that statement, I have solved phishing at Microsoft, and I will retire and open a bar or something. So that's kind of my holy grail. That's kind of my end goal. It's going to take a while to get there because the servers have to catch up. The cloud services have to do what they do. All the applications have to play along. So it's going to take a while to get there, but I think it's an achievable goal, especially with things like virtual smart cards that came around in Win 7. There are new authentication types being introduced in Windows 10 that I personally just think are going to change the world. And no, I'm not even being paid to say that. I'm just really bullish on Win 10. But until I get there, I still need to recognize that there are going to be situations where my users are going to be legitimately prompted for passwords. They're going to be on a device that doesn't support a virtual smart card. They're going to be on an application that isn't quite enlightened yet. And so if I can't protect the credentials, if I have to live with passwords for a while longer, and let's face it, I do, the next thing I want to do is protect my endpoints. So I want to be able to configure my applications, things like SharePoint Online, things like Visual Studio Online that's, you know, housing my source code. I want to be able to configure my applications and my endpoints such that for those SharePoint sites that I designate, for these branches of the Microsoft source code that I designate, yes, you can come in from the internet, and yes, you can come in with a username and password, but before I let you all the way in, I'm going to require step-up authentication. I'm going to require a second level of authentication. Now, I would love for you to use a virtual smart card, but if you're on a device that doesn't support that, at the very least, I'm going to give you that MFA challenge. I'm going to ring your cell phone. It doesn't eliminate the risk of phishing because passwords are still in the mix, but it minimizes the damage that an attacker can do with a phished password. If all of my applications and if all of my endpoints are configured to require strong authentication, even if an attacker gets my password, he or she is still going to be blocked at point of entry. I try to get in, you know, the attacker tries to get in with that phished password, but then they're going to fail the step-up challenge because they don't have my smart card or they don't have my cell phone. And so that's kind of my second pillar. First, I want to protect my credentials. Second, I want to protect my endpoints. The third thing I want to do, and this is just wall to wall, is the simple recognition that, what's the saying, I have to be right all the time, an attacker only has to be right once. And so the third sort of pillar that I want to put into place when I think about how we secure our stuff is I want to just monitor and respond just end to end. I want to put telemetry in place around my identity infrastructure. Where are people logging in from? What time of day are they logging in from? What resources are they accessing? You know, Laura Hunter comes to work every day at between, you know, 7:30 and 8 in the morning, and every day she walks in, sits down at her desk, and opens up SharePoint Online, Outlook, and Link. Well, today, she logged in from Elbonia at 4 in the morning and downloaded the entire CRM database. Maybe that's a problem. Maybe that should trigger an alert. Maybe that should trigger my security operations team to place some extra protections on her account. Maybe that should trigger a notification to Laura herself. Hey, have you had like something weird happen? And maybe you want to go reset your password. And this kind of monitoring and detection of suspicious behavior and the ability to then translate that into actionable responses, this is where the cloud lives and breathes. I mean, this is where Azure really comes into play, where, you know, tons of compute power, tons of data storage, machine learning and data analytics, I think, is just, this is what Azure was made for. This is what the cloud was made for. And so I'm really excited and really looking forward to the kinds of improvements that Microsoft IT can make to our ability to respond to the threats we can't prevent, so that if I can't prevent the thing from happening, I want to at least make the thing happening a noisy event so that I can then respond to it, so I can then mitigate the risk. And that's just kind of from an architectural standpoint, kind of these three pillars are the way that I look at how we secure our stuff, how we make sure that people can be productive and secure all at the same time, and, you know, eventually allowing me to sleep at night. I sleep okay.
That's a great framework, Laura. Somebody asked a question going back a little bit. Can you federate non-AD directories into the hybrid cloud architecture you're describing? They were wondering if that's a limitation of ADFS, and wondered if you could comment.
Absolutely. That's really your question. So the Active Directory, ADFS as a product, today only supports Active Directory as your identity store. If you have a non-Active Directory identity store, if you're in higher ed and you're using Shibboleth, or if you're using a third-party LDAP store, there are partner products on the market today that perform similar functionality to ADFS that will allow you to federate with your non-Active Directory identity store, and then be able to use those non-Active Directory identities to access To access Azure, to access O365. If you go, I don't know the link off the top of my head. We'll post it after the session. There's actually a list of works with O365. Federation servers other than ADFS. I can't remember who's on the list, but there's a pretty good handful. If that's something that's like super important to you, like if you have a third party directory structure and you really want to make that investment in ADFS to use ADFS to take your LDAP directory and move it into the cloud, that's absolutely something you should talk to your account manager about, because the product teams that are working on it, I mean, they're in product planning right now and pretty much all the time, because at this point they're releasing every 6 weeks. So make that feedback known, get that into your account team, and they can feed that into the planning process. And so, kind of dovetailing onto how I secure my stuff and, what I think about how I secure my stuff, there's a very specific use case that is, like, super important to me that historically has kind of flown under the radar, but because of, like, new features and new services that we have within Azure Active Directory, securing the Microsoft social presence is something that we're going to be focusing a lot on, like, with our content marketing group and whatnot, which is to say, there are any number of assets of applications that are not owned by Microsoft, be it Microsoft IT or Microsoft the cloud provider. At the end of the day, Microsoft is my cloud service provider. We just all happen to work for the same people. But there are additional resources and additional services where the data isn't owned by Microsoft. The service doesn't work and play well with something like a Federation server, but these services are still housing Microsoft data, and from a standpoint of social media, even more importantly, we have these services that are representing the Microsoft brand. Kind of the most canonical example you can think of is the Microsoft Twitter accounts. We have easily over 2,000 different Twitter accounts representing different facets of Microsoft that are managed by either by our content marketing group or by the individual business units. And everyone knows that, something like Twitter, something like Facebook, they use a username and password. It just plain is what it is. And so one of the things that we're working on, and the Azure AD team has, had a lot of advances here they're really helping us out, is how we can use an access panel to better control access to things like the Twitter accounts. So, for example, you can envision a scenario where, rather than I have this new social media person who's going to be managing the @WindowsAzure Twitter account. In the before time, what did I do? I emailed that person, or I somehow transmitted to that person the @WindowsAzure Twitter username and password, and hoped to heavens that when that person quit, I knew about it soon enough that I could then go and change the password and do all the things and hope they didn't post anything, inopportune in the meantime. Imagine a world where I don't have to do that anymore. Imagine a world where I give that same social media vendor, I give that person a URL that allows them to access the @WindowsAzure Twitter account so that they can do the things they need to do. They can post the things, and they can schedule the marketing campaigns and all of these, totally business legit things they need to do, but that person never has the password. They have no knowledge of it outside of that. They have no knowledge of it to be able to access it outside of that URL that I gave them. I can enforce strong authentication. I can make sure that even though it's Twitter and even though Twitter has their own username and password scheme, I can force you to authenticate using your corporate creds, using multi-factor auth, going through all of my audit and my telemetry and my, hey, this person is posting to the @WindowsAzure account at a time and a day and a place that just doesn't align with their expected level of behavior. Hey, let's start triggering some warnings. Let's make sure that we're not under attack. And I think it's just really exciting that we can use this combination of things like MFA, things like the different self-service experiences that we have out in the cloud, to be able to better secure something that is super important to Microsoft. You know, anytime a Twitter account or a Facebook account gets hacked, it's all over the news, and nobody wants that to happen. But we now have the ability to take this sort of combined ecosystem of the hybrid cloud world and secure these things that we never necessarily had a good way of securing before. And it's totally excited. I'm totally excited. I'm really looking forward to it.
Very cool. I'll let you keep going. I was just okay. Listening.
Oh, no, absolutely. And actually, I think that might have been the last that I had. So I think we are ready for Q&A.
Awesome. We do have a few questions queued up. I think this one came in when we were finishing up the last one. Will ADFS be able to participate in OAuth transactions? IEB resource server in the two of the three-legged scenario.
I'm just going to stare at you strangely because I don't actually know the answer to that question. I would say that you know there's a lot of resources out on the Techno forums, out on the MSDN forums. I know that from a standpoint of looking at modern protocols, things like OAuth, again, the product teams they're always in product planning. So if there's a scenario that you want to enable that's really important to you that the products don't support today, feed that feedback into your channels, take that back to your account managers and whatnot, and you know, feed that back into so that people like my counterparts in the Azure AD engineering group can then factor that into their product planning so that the next release that comes out, hey, we got a lot of customers who really want this, let's fit it into a QFE or a service pack or something.
And just to, so you know, they did follow up with a really important question.
Okay.
And that is that a Richard Sherman jersey that you're wearing?
Yes, to all of my friends who may be dialed in from the Green Bay area. We'll talk on Sunday. I'm representing my Seattle Seahawks. Go Hawks. See, it's a thing. Come to the dark side. We have cookies and Seahawks jerseys.
What is the benefit of using Azure with O365 as opposed to what we currently have, which is ADFS and DirectSync, to access O365? Do you have any sense of, or is that really something that they would talk to their account manager?
So I can, I'll speak kind of generally, and I'll use the Microsoft IT architecture as an example that will hopefully help to answer that question. Again, if it's like a really specific thing I don't address, then we can obviously again go and talk to your account manager. Microsoft IT has had Federation services running since it was first released in 2005. Back in the very early days of ADFS, we kind of joked that we were all dressed up with no one to federate with. I think we had 10 federations in our first release. Today we have over 7,000. I have 7,000 applications that are federated to my on-premises ADFS infrastructure. If that number scares people, I will caveat it with the fact that I support software developers. And so a lot of those applications are, hey, let me see if I can get this federation thing working. So that actually is kind of a large number. One of the things that we started thinking about when Azure Active Directory came into play was, does it make sense to continue to have all of these applications come directly to our on-prem ADFS, or does it make sense to federate them with Azure Active Directory? Now, I'd say the biggest benefit that you would get by federating with Azure AD as opposed to with on-prem ADFS is there are a lot of scenarios that are being lit up. Some of them exist today, some of them are in preview, some of them are under development, that really focus on the whole notion of B2B collaboration. So if I have my on-premises ADFS and I want to federate with one of my partners, I'm going to use Dell as an example. I want to federate with Dell. I got to call the Dell IT guy. I got to say, hey, Dell IT person, do you have ADFS running or one of the analogous partner partner products that runs the same protocols. Okay, great. Let's you and I figure out how I can federate with you and you can federate with me. And it's going to take at least a couple of weeks, you know, or, you know, maybe a week to get that running. Okay, I've done that for Dell. Well, I've got thousands of business partners that I want to do that same thing with. And Laura doesn't scale that well. Laura wants to sleep once in a while. Laura wants to watch the Seahawks game on Sunday. What we get with the Azure Active Directory is this notion of the federation hub, which is to say that if Microsoft is federated with Azure AD, unsurprisingly we are, we get a really good deal on licensing, and if a number of our partners are also federated with Azure AD, you know, this partner here, this business partner there, if all of us are if all of us are in the same club, if all of us are federated with Azure AD, there are certain benefits that we get around around cross-company collaboration that light up almost for free. Like we start being able to do things like I can share a SharePoint document to this account rep over at this company here, and I don't have to do anything special when this other company lights up. If this other company lights up and they're also using Azure AD, the IT guy doesn't have to do anything, but the owner of the SharePoint site can say, hey, I happen to know that partner XYZ just signed on with Azure AD. Hey, I need to share a document with them. Poof, I can do that, and I don't have to call IT, and I don't have to interrupt Laura's sleep, which is a good thing from Laura's perspective.
Great. Is the described capability from the last slide already available, leveraging the hybrid cloud to implement a no passwords for third-party apps like Twitter?
So the capability that's in the cloud today is a feature called the Access Panel, which essentially creates a single ingress point. You can see kind of what it looks like on the slide. And what this allows you to do is it allows you to configure applications and then send the links to that Access Panel to your users. Now there's a lot of different ways that you can configure it. I'm going to use Facebook now because I've been saying Twitter a lot. Using Facebook as an example, you can add a Facebook icon to the Access Panel. You can assign that Facebook icon to this group of users who all need to access the same Facebook page to post the updates and do whatever the thing is. And you can either pre-configure the credentials for them, or if you don't have that sort of information available to you, you can just assign Facebook, and then the first time the user accesses it, they can add their own username and password. Some of the specific mechanisms around, okay, well, how does the owner of the @WindowsAzure Twitter account, how does that person in marketing, how do they get that password to IT so that we can enter it for them? That specific mechanism doesn't fully exist in the product today. Obviously we move fast and we want to make sure that we're securing our resources. So today I do it the way I can do it, which is I'll ask that person to, you know, call me or send me an RMS protected email. But one of the things that's a really important scenario that IT is working with the product team to allow me to do things like, hey, IT doesn't want to build a lot of custom goo to make this end-to-end story work. The end-to-end story that I want is I want to protect my social media credentials. And today the Access Panel gets me 75% of the way there, and I just keep going and, you know, beating on my product team until they get me the other 25%. And in between, IT is going to write an app, or I'm going to create an InfoPath form so that I can bridge that gap where I'm being secure while I'm waiting for the necessary features in the cloud service to light up.
There's a question that was from earlier that I'm not sure if it... I'm just going to throw it out there and see if it's something that
throw it against the wall, see if it sticks.
Yeah. As a municipality, most of our applications are not the Salesforce/Oracle, et cetera, mainstream products. They're vertical market niche apps that we use to support most of our departments. What is the security protocol that they would need to be able to sync with Active Directory? And What should we specify for SaaS federated identity requirements? And this would be, this is a municipality.
Okay, so actually that's a very good question. So again, going back to the access panel that you saw on the last slide, when you go to add an application to the access panel, there is a pre-configured gallery of applications where you just click on the icon and you just get it. And there's like 3,000 some odd in that gallery today, and we've got a team that's actively working on enrolling more and more applications in that gallery. If you don't have, or if the application in question either isn't in the gallery yet or is a custom application that you've built, you can still add that application to the panel in one of two ways. If it's an application that just has its own separate username and password store, then morally, you're just treating it like it's a Twitter or a Facebook. You know, you add it to the access panel, and either you pre-fill the creds if you can, or the user enters their creds the first time. If you have the ability to work with your application providers and to work with your application vendors, you should absolutely be pushing them to support federated authentication and to support modern federated authentication protocols, things like SAML, things like a previous person mentioned OAuth, because the benefit that you get from that is if your applications and your application vendors support federated auth, then the moment you deprovision or the moment you disable someone's corporate credentials, the moment you disable someone's on-premises Active Directory account, that person instantaneously loses access to any federated applications that they previously had access to. You don't have the risk of, I walked out the door, and yes, you took my laptop when I walked out the door, but I've got all these account passwords, you know, written on a little piece of paper inside of my wallet, and maybe they'll deprovision me today, or maybe I'll still have access for days or weeks or months. Using federated authentication and, you know, really pushing your application vendors to support that model. It's better for you. It's better for the application vendor because then they can sell their stuff to people like me who won't sign on with an application unless it uses federated auth.
Great. Couple more questions, and mm-hmm. we're coming up to the end here. Laura, you mentioned monitor and respond to suspicious user activities in real time. What's the enabler for doing this? Is the Azure cloud? Is it the Azure cloud that provides this intelligence based on users' access histories?
So this is a work in progress. This is something that is either like under development or we've got some things that are in preview. There's all kinds of data sources for your user behavior. There's the logs that you can get from Azure. There are the logs that you get from your on-premises infrastructure, from your Active Directory domain controllers, from your Federation servers, and for on-premises applications, and starting to be for cloud applications, MSIT uses a SIEM infrastructure. We use a sort of a data collection point where we pull the logs from our Active Directory DCs, we pull the logs from our Federation services, from all these different sources, and we use that. It's a third party SIEM solution, and we use that to pull the data together, apply a bunch of learning to it, and translate that down into the guy who runs my security operations team gave me a great sort of snippet the other day, which is something like our SIEM infrastructure today collects 3 million events per day that are then correlated down to 1,000 actionable events per hour, which are then even further winnowed down to someone's pager going off once an hour. And so the challenge in being able to alert and monitor and respond for a big enterprise is that we got a lot of data. My Active Directory DCs, our logs roll every 10 minutes. Like, if I wasn't looking at the log right when it happened, I got no chance in terms of looking at the actual logs on the DCs, which is why we do things like log shipping into a SIEM system that allows us to do things like security correlation for incident response and just ongoing monitoring. It's really a good thing. I'm not totally sure I answered that person's question, but we can follow up afterwards or offline.
Yeah, that was great. We do have a couple of questions, but we don't have time to finish. So we will take these questions and we'll post them after the presentation. I just wanted to, it was great, Laura.
Thank
you. I
always
love listening to you present. It's just, I always learn something. And thank you for providing us with your insights. And I'd like to thank our audience for their questions and interactions. We hope you guys felt that this was valuable and that you'll join us again next month, where we'll be talking about another industry topic. To learn more about upcoming topics and to register, please email itlive@microsoft.com or contact your account representative. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.